when you'll always be able to say where you were for Sergio Corvado's first Whitecaps goal. It's That's So MLS. With myself, Nick Thornton, and with me as always is Andrew Bates. Andrew, how are you doing?
Nick, I'm doing great. How are you?
I feel better now.
That was an amazing Whitecaps game to really lift the spirits. You're absolutely right about Cordova with a goal to take the 3 points for Vancouver. I have to admit, when that was all happening, I thought that he was standing there way too long. He had so much time up there.
That hesitation. I was like, boy, you just had your chance.
But what can you say? He's due. He's been working hard. So I'm glad to see him get that.
He has been working hard. He now officially has more goals than Messi in MLS. So he's on his way on the up and up.
I was excited. This was one of the great AEW Dynamite to Wednesday Night MLS moves for me, because they announced a wrestler that I like is coming in on that show, and then like within 30 minutes. Pedro Vite scores in the first opening minute of the game, and I'm like, this really couldn't be going better for me. I'm having a great 45 minute I'm having a great moment in time here.
Yeah, we keep the bar low around these parts. A good 45 is all we ask for as Whitecaps fans.
That's right.
Yeah, it's been a minute since we've chatted, and lots of stuff has happened. Do we want to talk about maybe some of the big news? I know a lot of it's not necessarily news anymore, but I think there's a few notable things that have happened.
Well, I feel like one of the big seismic shifts was as I was sitting in a hotel in Mississauga on June 26th, realizing that there had been a changing of the guard in Toronto. That's right. Terry Dunfield is the mayor. That's not true.
Yeah, I don't think at this point any of us could be too surprised. But of course, Bob Bradley is out at TFC. You know, in some ways, I was kind of surprised he lasted as long as he did. And I'd sort of thought that if they were going to keep him this far, that they would just keep him till the end of the season. But it was not to be. As you say, Terry Dunfield has taken over in the interim role. And they haven't played a bunch since, so we haven't really had a good look at TFC in the Dunfield era. I don't know. I don't have much to say about this other than it needed to happen. But do you have any additional thoughts or parting words for dear Bob Bradley?
Well, yeah, it was I think that whatever, you know, is as famous as the book on the MLS winning years will be big for TFC, the book on what exactly happened when all of these personalities came in, this big financial push, is going to be interesting, because he tried to put his stamp on it. I don't know how much he was or wasn't involved in the Insigne part, but two forces moving in opposite directions eventually was not overly successful. It has been three losses since the Terry Dunfield era. Is he a caretaker? Or I believe he's a caretaker. I don't think this is supposed to be a permanent deal. Or is he going to the end of the season?
I don't know. I think it's an interim thing. Probably it's like there's the option to go to the end of the season if, you know, he performs and they can't find anyone else. But I got the sense that it was very clearly a, like, you are in charge until we find the new TFC coach.
I didn't think that these three games have been terrible. Obviously, the Orlando, Toronto lost to Orlando 4-0 away. That sucked.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
Orlando had a great strategy of like, pushing forward and getting crosses that was that had a lot of benefits, but then, you know, they had a strong game against RSL and just happened to be undone late by Anderson Julio. That's not the last time we'll say that this week.
No. It's true. Well, and interestingly, in the interim as well, Bernadeschi got a red card, was fined, and is now also serving a ban for yellow card accumulation. So, like, it'll be interesting to see, but maybe don't put money on it, but I think Bernadeschi could be the next one out. I think that you talk about these two forces moving in opposite directions, and I think both directions might be away from TFC. I just think that, you know, Bernadeschi needs to rise to the challenge. If he's going to be the last man standing in the whatever that skirmish was, he really does need to prove himself a lot more. And he just seems to be distracted and frustrated. And, you know, I'm not saying it's all on him to turn it around, but let's face it, I think he's pretty dramatically underperformed this season, as have all of TFC.
That's right. And as much as I'll say that, like, the RSL and the St. Louis 1-0s were, like, not markedly bad, those were also home games. And yeah. I think they had chances, but they didn't necessarily have lots and lots of chances. I will also say that Carabana kit, when I saw the front of it, I thought, this is amazing. And it has that same terrible... This is the blue and fluorescent pink one. And it has the same issue that so many of the kits have this year with Adidas, which is that they have an amazing front graphic. And then not only is it a flat back color, but it's a contrast color to the front. So it looks like they've just sort of...
rolled in paint.
Yeah. Not good. Don't love it. Even though the idea was good. The other major note for Toronto was that... Don't they also have a change in goalkeeper at this time? They were using a guy for two of those three games. Who did okay. And a lot of teams have been, you know, doing their best with the Gold Cup, but they were giving some minutes to where is his name?
Ranjit Singh.
Yeah, they were giving minutes to Greg Ranjit Singh, and he did do terrible. He was in there for that 4-0, but I don't know exactly, like, that's his fault. Seeing Thomas Romero come back in and get that that other start seems like they're seeing which one will pan out. What is happening with Sean Johnson is injured, I assume, that we're not seeing him currently, he must be with the Gold Cup team.
I think he's international duty. Yeah.
I would say, like, goalkeepers have been, like, the number one problem for TFC, in those matches that I saw, even though it was a 4-0. But I'm sure that getting a little bit more stability will help. The other big news, is that we have an MLS veteran swap.
Yeah, that was my big news that I was going to surprise you with, but it's not a surprise anymore. Marc-Anthony Kay has left TFC in exchange for Latif Blessing from New England and an international roster spot.
How have they not already used all of the international roster spots?
I don't know. Maybe that's why they want another one. I don't know. I feel like they were playing Marc-Anthony Kay out of position for most of the season. I don't think Marc-Anthony Kay has been very good for TFC. Also, TFC haven't been very good. Latif Blessing hasn't really reestablished himself in the New England squad. New England has traded for, like, three midfielders so far this summer window. So I think that this overall makes sense for both teams. I like both players. I think Latif Blessing is an incredibly underrated player. We saw how good he could be again with LAFC and with Sporting Kansas City. Marc-Anthony Kay, like, you want to love the kid. It's obviously just hasn't happened for him with Toronto, and it didn't really happen for him in Colorado either. I really hope that he finds what he needs in New England, and you certainly think a guy like Bruce Arena is very careful with the types of players and people he brings in. And it would be nice to see Marc-Anthony Kaye kind of get back on track and be continuing to develop, versus I think sometimes just the expectations put on him in certain roles where people forget, like, he's still a pretty young player and still really learning his craft. And Latif Blessing is always great. I don't know that he automatically makes... Actually, no, I'm sorry. I think he does make TFC automatically better. What am I saying? I think their midfield has been pretty woeful. Latif Blessing's small. He's quick. He's good at with the ball at his feet. Like, what's not to like there? So, I don't know. I hope it works for both clubs and all players.
I'm interested in this move for Kaye. I always want good things for him. I hoped that Toronto would be a better spot. I guess I don't think of him as young. 28 is not too bad, though. There's still time to add another, to get to another level. Because I always thought that he was really great for LAFC. And maybe he kind of suffered in that environment just for being like, I think that he's like, you know, that he has the makings of a really good midfielder, good enough to be on LAFC, but LAFC just loaded themselves with so much that it's like, if you were looking at like, I think that he absolutely can be an elite midfielder, but it's like in LAFC Gareth Bale land, they had too many toys. It's kind of how I felt about it sometimes. And I mean, I know that like, there are some, I'm not saying that there are no issues, but like, I'm really hopeful that they're, that going down to New England will give him some great opportunities. There are good people to work with down there.
Yeah. We also have another, a few returning faces to MLS. Tata Martino, of course, was announced as the head coach Inter Miami. I had a moment where I thought maybe TFC might have tried to make a power move and get him in, but they definitely didn't have enough time, and obviously they don't have Messi on their team. So,
yeah, the Messi circus is coming together.
Oh, boy. I don't know that I'm ready. It's going to be interesting, but good to see Tata Martino back. Obviously, he didn't do much with Mexico, but he's a great coach. He knows MLS. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Of course, there's still rumors about who will be joining Inter Miami. We'll let those rest until something actually happens, but could be a fairly stacked squad. And it couldn't come at a better time for them because they're dead last in the Eastern Conference and they've still only won 5 games.
Oh man. just saying. When Caden Braden Graydon knocks them out in September. That's been my suggestion. That's the thing. Everybody is now that it's time to start putting together think pieces comparing Messi to Beckham's time. Everybody is remembering how Beckham's time went, which is he didn't win for like 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. Another big trade that happened is CF Montreal decided to splurge for Opoku from LAFC. Speaking of LAFC and their toys, Opoku obviously not. I don't think he was really surplus in their squad, but when you're being offered $1.75 million in GAM, I think you go, yeah, we can make that one happen for you guys. For Montreal, I think it's like this is a smart way to spend a lot of money. I think Opoku will be good in there. It makes sense to me. It's a lot of money. But if CF Montreal want to pull themselves across the finish line and at least make the playoffs this season, I kind of think they had to make a move for a striker.
So, yeah, they've got a coach. They've got a coach that they're trying to get behind. The players are there. It just... A little bit of strengthening hopefully will help. And in this in this new expanded MLS postseason format. They've got a shot.
They've got a shot. They could do it. Also kind of related to Montreal, a player we're familiar with, Ismail Tajiri-Shradi, is back to Minnesota. He was over in Cyprus, and he's already scored for them. So he's fit right back into the league. But it's always kind of nice to see players coming back to MLS. Also, it just makes our jobs easier because I know their playing style already.
I like that. I've always liked Tajiri-Shradi, so I'm glad that he's getting some nice... Getting another chance to shine. That's pretty fun. With regards to Montreal, and we talked a little bit about like you that they need to pick it up a little. They've had a couple of tough results, and another very similar way to Toronto. Where it's like the matches aren't necessarily bad. Some of them have got chances, but it's just like a couple of 1-0s and then one bad one.
Yeah. Yeah, they lost 3-0 to Chicago most recently. Yeah, and that's the thing that kind of confounds me about Montreal right now is like, I mean, you'd think that they would have every excuse to kind of be terrible this season. I mean, they lost a boatload of players. They lost their coach. And yet I think our expectations have kind of been raised by Losada and how well he's put an actual team together. And when you look at the lineups that he's putting out there, the starting 11s, you're like, yeah, that's a pretty serviceable starting 11. That's a team that should be able to go and compete with Chicago. And then the game ends 3-0 and you're like, okay, well, I was mistaken.
I was going to say that in all three of these games, that there are major works of brilliance by players. that makes it tough.
Yeah,
the New York City game where it's like a Matias Pellegrini bicycle kick, Matias Almada hitting the bar on a free kick, but it scored on the rebound. Against Chicago, those first two goals are definitely like a defensive problem, where the initial chance doesn't come to anything, but the ball is just too open and players have too much space to capitalize on that. But the Shaqiri strike from outside of the box is outrageous. He has a free kick. He passes. He does a give and go. Gets the ball back at the top of the box and hits something that is almost the goal of the week. But there's another one that's just like it that I like a little better.
Yeah, yeah. And it's unfortunate too because, like, you know, Sirwa has proven to be a great goalkeeper. But like you say, if a player decides to just uncork an absurd hit, then. Like, well, that'll happen. But obviously, Montreal's biggest problem is, I mean, it's hard to defend if you're forced to defend for an entire game. And the lack of goals that's been coming, or not coming, obviously, hopefully will be on the mend soon with reinforcements arriving.
That's right. Adding a forward like Opoku to the mix is definitely going to help.
Yeah, it can't hurt. It cannot hurt. A couple of other news things. Felipe Gutierrez is back to Sporting Kansas City. You might remember that name. He played with them previously. He's now back with them. Sporting Kansas City kind of doing the reinforcement thing. Obviously, Peter Vermees is a very loyal coach. He likes his starting 11 and... I think we see him bringing in players that are going to augment that, not the kind of coach that really strikes me as like going out to buy a player that's going to be, you know, a brand new cog in the starting 11 right away. And Mamadou Fall, who I thought I was quite sad to see him leave the league. He is back now from his loan to La Liga side Villarreal. And he's back with LAFC.
Nice. It's good to see him back.
Well, actually, they do need a little boost.
They need a little boost. Yeah, that was one thing where, you know, for a while it was people were getting wins on LAFC. People were wondering, you know, they had that El Tráfico on July 4th where they lost to the LA Galaxy at the Rose Bowl in what was a pretty good match. LAFC just couldn't quite string it together. There were opportunities, the offside goal for Vela, the two goals from Tyler Boyd and Elie.
They got pooged.
Hate the strobe show at that venue, by the way. No light shows. Everybody in NWSL fighting against the light shows. I'm with you. It's not a light show if you just turn the lights on or off. That is that is a middle school house party style maneuver. Stop it. Stop doing it.
Oh, boy. I can't beat that.
But then they have a little bit of a better time against St. Louis on Wednesday here.
Yeah, they do. Obviously, they've been struggling. I thought that this was a good win to get back. And I mean, St. Louis is like all over the place right now. Right? Like, they have games and they're right back to who they were at the beginning of the season. And then this happens. But yeah, I feel like there wasn't much in this one until Vela's shot in the 70th minute to sort of break the deadlock. Buonga just running through absolute walls to get Buick onside, and then Cifuentes with the final third goal. I didn't quite understand the celebration. He plugs his ears in front of the home crowd and sort of told them to shush, and I was like, but you usually do that to the opponent's end, not your own side. Anyway, maybe he's feeling the heat. Obviously not anymore, because he got a great goal.
The one thing I also want to say that I liked about that Wanga goal, or the assist to Buick, is that I felt that was a great use of the grass. Like, it's so often you see, you know, square balls played through the air or something, and I felt that, like, the use of playing the ball on the turf at that point, like, created...
Curl on it, too.
Curl on it. It was, like, exactly placed and weighted and timed. It couldn't have been done better, and sending the ball through the air would not have got the ball where it needed to be at the time that it needed to be there.
And I think that's, like, the thing. I mean, there's obviously lots of things that make Denny Buonga a great player, but it's the decision-making in moments like that. Like, he just has so many different ways of contributing. Just lethal for LAFC, which is why it was so surprising that, like, they've struggled so mightily, just really not looking themselves. So if they can turn that around quickly, they should be back to doing the damage. But for the moment, St. Louis is still 2 points above them in the West, number one spot.
I had a great Wednesday as a Vancouver Whitecaps fan, as we noted. It's been interesting the last couple of weeks. Obviously, there was a great result against LAFC. Then things went a little bit more rough. There was another bad trip to Sporting Kansas City.
Ugh, always.
You always watch those games with your hand over your eyes like, oh my God.
There's no mercy at Children's Mercy Park.
No. The game against Seattle that was the Whitecaps Pride match, the vibes were so good. Everything was working in the right way, and then we lost. What?
Yeah.
Pot?
Yeah. Yeah. I tuned into that game as Gald scored. And then, of course, within moments it seemed it all came unhinged, and then came unhinged further. Brutal.
You've got an early goal in the first half from Vancouver. Gald, then Leo Chu ties it up. Gald gets the go-ahead goal. Leochu scores again. So it's not like the 2-2 is not exactly what you would want, but it's like you can deal with it. You could deal with
it. I can swallow that. I could take a 2-2 home draw against Seattle.
And then Matias Laborda gets sent off, and Seattle scores again essentially right away. Just like your thought of like, are the Whitecaps going to be able? It was one of those goals that was like 1,000% mental to me against Neymar.
Where it's the like, goal had been scored when Laborda walked off the field, basically.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So like that sucked because like I was disappointed in like that didn't match any of the other like brain chemicals I had from the previous, you know, 70 minutes.
Yeah.
Where the Whitecaps were winning or were in a winning position.
It's true. Although San Jose did the Lord's work right after and beat them 2-0 on Wednesday. So thank you for your services, Christian Espinoza. And I forget Trauco's first name, but that's a hell of a volley.
I think that was better than
that. Cool. Yeah. I think that ball is still traveling somewhere. That was a excellent, excellent volley and excellent 3 points for San Jose. And I don't even care if they're above us in the table. They're also taking points off Seattle, and that's all that matters at the end of the day.
Yeah, that was a strongly, strongly put together one. We talked a little bit about Minnesota, but they had an interesting game away at Houston. You have this goal from Longwane, and he has like 3 years in the box. He's writing a treatise. I just saw Hamilton, and this guy is out here writing the Minnesota papers in Houston's 6 yard area.
My note for this one is, my note for this one is just, Longwane just has to wait until the orange guys stop flailing and calmly buries it.
But it was a great strike up into the corner. Other Minnesota did great. And the players, the team's players that are coming in are producing. Timo Pukki got his goal. Everybody was very excited to see some production from him. Longwane also set up Tajiri Shradi with a rebound.
That's right. Yeah. Obviously, Minnesota, coming off a big 4-1 defeat, I thought this was a good turnaround one. Reynoso's obviously fit back into the squad and things are going well there. I feel like this is the second or third game this week that's had just like a straight down the gut, middle of the field pass where, and then a player runs onto it and scores. Like, that seems to be the play this week, but. It's also good to see, you know, your two new guys that you've brought in to help score goals, because that's been your major issue. Both score a goal against a Western Conference rival. Doesn't get any better than that.
No, it's what you want.
It is what you want.
I think what you don't want is to have three players sent off for both teams, including a impromptu wrestling match in the back 20 game. Nashville Philadelphia was quite the barn burner, and I would say that, you know, everything is going to be focused on that little interaction there at the end, but like vibes were off to me the whole time. Like there were so many little chippy things that happened that it does not surprise me that something physical took place at the conclusion of the match, because you have Gosdag is shoved in the air for that penalty on the first goal, and like in the highlights it doesn't really dwell on it, but like his head is like just misses the crossbar. He would have, you know, he would have had his arms, like he could have like protected himself, but like that's scary when you have a player who's rocketing towards the ground head first. That's scary to me. You had a handball penalty bar call that's disallowed for VAR. Just like the bad, a second yellow happens immediately before that that little fracas, and then you have the moment itself. Who are the players? I think it's somebody
Moore
got hit,
and Carranza.
Somebody got hit by a water bottle too.
Yeah, there's definitely some shit flying from the Nashville supporters.
So it's Moore and Carranza. You have a player. Gets an initial shove, and then there's a belly to back call where I think it's Carranza picks him up, or just like, it's Moore who picks up Carranza and like looks like he's gonna hit him with a belly to back suplex, but puts him back down. So then Carranza comes and like gets him in a headlock.
He's like, "Oi, don't pick me up, mate."
Bad. Yeah. Just a lot. Although, I think that there's a lot of reasons not to have fighting in hockey. And I don't necessarily think that that would be great for soccer. But what if you had a wrestling match in soccer? What if you could, and I'm talking about an amateur wrestling match, call it down the middle. If two players get too heated, they grapple a little bit. And whenever, the moment somebody gets on their back, it's done. No close fists.
It's possible that that's what they were trying to pilot here. Interestingly, not surprisingly, both coaches sort of played it down. They're like, I don't even know if that's a yellow. And I'm like, We have definitely seen players get red cards for hauling players to the turf. And it's just so needless. Lovitz had gotten sent off already. Things had definitely been spilling over. I'm fine with this. Like, okay, yes, it's the end of the game, but you also have two players that just completely blow their stacks. And as a league, they're very clear about trying to send messages and be consistent with certain calls. And if you don't do that in these types of cases, then I think that teams start to play beyond that edge that they should be playing up to. Nashville is an incredibly physical team, bodying Philadelphia all over the place. I thought Philadelphia stood up to it well. And I thought that overall, this was refereed in a way that let the players get on with it. But if things go over the line, don't cross the line, guys. I don't know. I feel like they're pretty clear red cards. And that was a lot more than just pushing and shoving when two players are actually grappling and hauling each other to the pitch. It's like, all right. Like, I know nobody drew blood here, but also, like, you can't fight.
You can't fight.
You can't fight.
The two things I would say there are, I would say that like the differentiate it towards between like pushing and shoving in the penalty area. Lots of things physically happen in the penalty area when the camera is on the corner flag that maybe are not strictly speaking, maybe could be considered fouls they had elsewhere on the pitch. But you had a player whose feet leave the ground. And two, you had a player with the arm wrapped around the head and neck. I feel like both of those are any face touching. No face touching has always been a rule. And yeah. I think that those aspects, even though, no real harm done in terms of no injuries or anything, but I would say those are definitely things that put it above the pale of like what you should be expecting in a game.
I think Jim Curtin also got a yellow card for saying fuck. He did make a good point that he was like, if that's a yellow card, then there's going to be nobody left to play the game. But
I thought that
I think it matters where it's directed and how it's used at what point in a game, and especially if it's at the fourth official or something like that. And again, it's. I have no problem with a referee trying to take control of a match. And what's the argument? Like, I should be allowed to blow off steam and players should be allowed to fight and I should be allowed to cuss out officials. Sometimes it doesn't go punished by some referees, but they do. It's still in the rules of the game that a referee is the ultimate decider of, the decorum. And I think that they're trying to send a strong message to coaches this year that doesn't matter who you are, if you're going to be disrespectful towards the referees or do something you're not supposed to do, you're also going to get a card.
And speaking of that, I know that this is the ship has probably sailed on this in this point and years ago. But the Nashville players on that handball penalty call are way too close to the ref. There's way too many of them around the ref for me. I know that that's one that where it's like if I had to really like, you know, scorekeep on how often players surround the referee, I would be, you know, having my notepad out in every game. So I don't want to single out anyone unnecessarily, but that one for whatever reason, that one stuck out to me is like, again, vibe off in this game. The vibe is off. There is bad blood running through the veins of both teams. And I just thought you have got to be give more space to the referee in those situations.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, when you're playing Philadelphia in a tough physical game, is like you're going to have to make your luck. And having two players sent off and giving up silly penalties, like that's problems of your own making, I feel. Speaking of problems of your own making, Sporting Kansas City, who have been pretty good all of a sudden, especially against the Whitecaps, they didn't go anywhere. They stayed home to play RSL, and once again, another team doing the Lord's work in the Western Conference. They go down 2-0. Johnny Russell crosses to Shalloway, who gets one. 5 minutes later, Russell gets one of his own.
Feel good moment.
Absolutely. The way to break RSL down, apparently, is just balls in behind. Nobody really bothering to close down crosses. And then immediately as the second half begins, Moskovsky gets in through on a great ball from Arango. Christian Arango, obviously the former LAFC player who RSL brought in. He's already scored for them as well. Seems to have found his place there quite quickly. RSL get back in it. It's 2-1. And then Rosero just in a center back display for the ages, just kind of like misplays it off himself, and as you said before, Anderson Julio down at the schoolyard, strips him of the ball, scores it coolly. This one ends 2-2. RSL, like, they've been kind of under the radar and obviously needing some reinforcements, but they're still in fourth place. Obviously, it's tight in the West. They're just hanging on to that fourth place spot. But I thought this was an important win to sort of stop SKC in their tracks a bit, especially coming back down from 2-0 down. I mean, we're used to seeing RSL fight, but I thought this was a good result for them.
I don't know how to explain it. Anderson Julio went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 games without scoring. And then his last last game was his most recent start. He's been a substitute in the last three games. He's scored in all of them.
Yeah. Sometimes the wind just changes direction and then you're good again.
I'm realizing that counts Open Cup games and Ecuador friendlies, which maybe that shouldn't count. But I was reading off the MLS match log. That was my bad.
I mean, that's still more chances to score goals and not doing it, you know?
That's true.
I see your point. A game that took over a week to get played finished 0-0. I'm so sorry for anybody that held tickets for Portland, Colorado that decided to come back the following week for the second half.
Oh, my.
Fucking nothing happened. Oh, my God. It was... I want my time back, and I only watched the highlights, but just disjointed and poor. Just, like, man, if I have a question mark over a team this season, it is Portland Timbers. Like, sometimes they just look so good, and then other times you're like, what am I actually watching right now? Colorado, you kind of always have that feeling this season, but Portland, where are you at?
Where are they at? I was also going to note that Portland always, or sorry, MLS highlight videos in the Apple era are like almost always 7 minutes, whether they're seven minutes of content or not. And This time it's 5 because they couldn't. They couldn't figure it out.
We have an interesting cloud formation over the horizon. If you want to direct your attention over there, like, whoo, that was a. For the announcers, I'm sure that was one to start digging out the like deep stats from days of yore.
I think that this you're absolutely right about Portland, and it kind of begs the question, with some movement happening with players in other teams in the league, I think Portland fans have got to wonder if there's going to be some assistance coming in. I think Frank Bolli has been great. He hit the crossbar, could have scored. But it hasn't been moving as fast as they are accustomed to in the Rose City.
No, and they kind of remind me a bit of Montreal, where it's like on paper, you look at the lineup and you're like, yeah, there's no reason why that Timbers side couldn't go out and win against RSL. And then, or Colorado rather. And then you're like, well, was not to be, I suppose. Another team for whomst it was not to be, Red Bulls, got a nice goal against Cincinnati. They got an opening penalty for what I think was maybe a handball. Looked a little dubious, but they get given. And then it stays that way until about the 80th minute, when Cincinnati win another kind of soft PK. Acosta scores it easily, and then Wobodo lashes in a ball from Acosta.
Wow.
And spills under Coronel in just like the slow, meandering, unfortunate goal. Cincinnati, here's a stat for you. A few stats. Cincinnati have only lost two games in the last 21 games.
Wow.
In 2021, Cincinnati lost 22 games. Now they're number one in the East, and they're 8 points clear of the second team.
That's amazing.
Times have fucking changed for Cincinnati.
What a result. We loved it. Ooh. I'm happy for them. I'm sure that nobody has put in the hardship work more.
Absolutely not.
And they I mean, like, I feel that it's going to be a really chaotic playoff anyways, because I think in both conferences you have teams that are, I mean, like, Cincinnati was improving last year as well, so it's not that they're a total surprise, but, like, you know, who knows what St. Louis is going to do in the playoffs? We've never seen them.
Yeah.
We've never seen that. The expanded format is going to make things, I think, ultra chaotic, but you've got to. You can't say that they're doing there's anything better than what they could be doing right now. I'm sure that if you are a club that's at the top end of either conference at this point, you are looking at the League's Cup and thinking, please do not fuck this up for me.
Yeah. Well, and I think they've been vocal about the, you know, they've brought in a couple of players where they're just looking to strengthen and go like, yeah, we've performed obviously very well, but like, what are the signings we can make to dream into the next step? Like, I think they're rightly making the assumption they'll be in the playoffs. I've also crunched the math, and it's about 47 points that'll get you in either conference this year. I think it should be about that. So I think it's fair to say, like, Cincinnati could lose every single game from here on out and still grab a playoff spot in the East. They're obviously aiming for higher than that. I mean, Supporters Shield could come a knocking. They're 10 points ahead of St. Louis, so they've got that going for them. But why not make a deep playoff run, right? Like, they're not any club, regardless of how quickly you've grown, is not going to be satisfied with just number one in the East and then crashing out of the playoffs in your first game. So, it'll be interesting to see. There's going to be some, as you say, different movers and shakers in the playoffs this year.
I also think that when you talk about those strengthening signings, that's the LAFC strategy, right? The way to sign your way to a championship isn't always to bring in some new, you know, to bring in a third designated player, or to bring in somebody who will drastically change your style of play, but to already have the cupboard full and think, I'm gonna get a few more.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And there's obviously, I think there's been some questions about Brandon Vasquez, if he'll continue at Cincinnati. They just brought in Aaron Bupenza, who is a new DP signing. But yeah, I think, as you say, just like looking to strengthen, and if you already have the full cupboard, then you need to be very choosy about the players you bring in. And Cincinnati has done that. And we shall see what happens.
They almost set the record for 11 consecutive home wins, but they drew instead. That's still pretty good.
It's still great. I think the only one we're missing is New England, Atlanta. Two teams that I don't feel like we've talked about a ton. New England had an issue in the week prior where there was a goal disallowed, and then Pro came out afterwards and said, yep, we got that one wrong. However, that didn't change the outcome of that game. Atlanta has been pretty decent as of late. Obviously, Almeida scoring a lot of goals. They've brought in some big players as well. They moved Guzman over to Colorado. I don't know, man. Sometimes I feel like watching New England, like, they're a bit painful to watch because it just can be a little bit too organized for my liking.
Right.
But then there's these little moments of magic, and it's usually the two players you would expect, and you're just like, oh yeah, right, that's why New England is a great team and why they are always so high up in the standings.
I can't hate a team that's got up Carlos Hill with these amazing breakouts.
You can't. It's just that there'll be like 60 minutes of just sort of seemingly nothing really happening.
That's the thing, is that from Matt Polster is amazing. Rocket.
Yeah. Yeah, and it just goes to show, like, they're just a very, very hard team to get any points off of whatsoever. And, as the schedule wears on, that's going to be tough for teams, too, like the Montreals, the Red Bulls, the Charlottes, who are looking to get into the playoffs. I think most of those teams play New England at least once more. That's tough.
It's true. I also want to shout out Dordi Petrovic. I thought it was amazing. I was looking at whether or not he's where he lies in the MLS All-Star discussion, and in terms of top keepers.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's been having an amazing season.
Absolutely, he has. Do you want to talk about Gold Cup?
I kind of just my brain turned off the moment I was in the air and they had that first game. I was like, oh, I'm going to try and go watch that. And it didn't happen. But I understand it has been a confounding Gold Cup for both Canada and America.
Yeah. Yeah, Canada just really bowed out early on. Not a very good showing in any of our games. I don't know if anyone would have necessarily guessed a Panama-Mexico final, but here we are.
Here we are.
Panama beating U.S. in penalties last night, so... Yeah, Canada dumped out with a whimper. The U.S. fared slightly better. And take nothing away from Panama or Mexico. But, you know, we talked about Mexico's fate previously and how shattered they looked. So they obviously were able to turn things around. But just, yeah, across the board from the U.S. and Canada, it was just kind of looked like both sides forgot how to play. I don't know if it was just nerves or what, but truly nothing to write home about with any of their matches.
The new Canada focus turns to the Women's World Cup. I think it was weird for me that there were no home matches to prepare for the Women's World Cup, and they're like announcing games for Olympic qualifying. That was weird to me. Everything around the TSN show announcing the rosters There were a number of things that were a little surprise, a little strange to me. I thought overall good talk, the presenters, the panel was great. But I thought it was weird. They did this thing with Desiree Scott, who is injured, and spoiler alert, it's not in the game, but she, not in the team, but like, yeah. They used her as like a reality show tease. They were like, is Desiree Scott going to be in the team? And then like they announced before they introduced each section of the roster, they did the goalkeepers first, then they did the defenders and the midfielders and the forwards. They're like, Desiree Scott, here's what makes her important as a player. Here's the rosters. And then she's not on it. And they're like, yep. So she's injured. It's like, why was this like a tease done in this way?
Like you knew that going in.
It felt kind of strange to me, except as a storytelling technique to allow you to think, to help you understand, I guess this would be the how you would defend it. It's a storytelling technique to help you understand, okay, well, this is an important player of the team. She's not on it. It's not really a surprise that she's not on it. It's not her fault. But it will probably be an impact that she's not there. Other than that, it's a fine roster. I would say that Canada is in with the injuries that it has, also an injury to Janine Becky. She won't be around. And there was another player that was announced where it's like, we certainly hope she's going to be fine. I think that like, this is exactly where they're at. This is exactly where they're at, depth wise, where I wouldn't say that there are like massive, snubs of any kind.
No.
But they've got a good, defenders, basically everybody that you would imagine is there. The big swing is taking, 18-year-old Olivia Smith, who has two caps, and dropping her in the mix, but I think that's going to be exciting. And the players that you can, in Simi Awuo is going to be in there, also six caps and age 19. So they are doing what they can to have some new blood, to have some, to get some players some experience in addition to, the names that we're going to be quite familiar with, over the last couple of years of this team.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be fun. It's been so weird with Canada soccer. Jason DeVos having that quote where he was like, we might go bankrupt. That it's like,
The
vibes have been so off that like, it's so hard to imagine them going into a World Cup, but to turn all that off and be like, all right, it's time to enjoy a World Cup together, guys. But you know, that we've seen in many international tournaments before.
We just did it once, so
that's right. We've seen in many international tournaments before.
Do it again, friends.
Controversy can push.
Yeah.
Push aside closer together.
It's true. Canada will face off against Nigeria on July 20th in Melbourne. Melbourne.
That'll be fun. Some of that is happening on or around my birthday, so I'll be excited for that.
Well,
thanks for giving me a World Cup on my birth. It's a wonderful birthday present to me.
Thanks, FIFA. until the next hectic, busy game week, where can we find you online?
You can find me online on Instagram and Threads at Team Batesy, at Team Bates at Mastodon.social. I don't know if that's like, everybody has different ways to use Mastodon, but I, I have
leave
that.
No stone unturned.
I have that account since like 2017. And of course, the best way and place to find me is at www.team-bates.com. I've been thinking a lot about like social media content and how to best direct my energies. And I just feel that, you know, thanks for that directly going for the content you want to see is so powerful. So thanks to everybody for subscribing and tuning into our wonderful content.
Yes. Which you can do at thatsomls.com on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get podcasts, just search thatsomls. Please rate, review and subscribe.
Can we find you online anywhere?
You can. I'm just on the good old fashioned Instagrams at thatsomls. Also there, doing things.
Very good.
Not sharing a ton of clips because Instagram doesn't let you do that very easily anymore. But there and happy to be there. And until next time, don't grab a player around the midsection to throw him to the mat because he might both get sent off. Don't do it.
Don't do it.